everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable, episode 167. Today we're going to be discussing Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 4, episode 1, The Freshman, and Angel, season 1, episode 1, City of. As usual, you can get in contact with us via email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypable.com or visit us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Karen, and today I am joined by Kristen, Brittany, and Caitlin. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
It's been a really long time since I've been here. I've been traveling a lot, and I was sick last week, even though I was supposed to be on, but I'm here now. And honestly, I'm really glad that I get to be here for the first episode of Angel, because I'm really curious as to what everyone thinks, and I'm excited to talk about it. But before we get into that, we're going to do some fun facts so we can, you know, introduce ourselves a little bit. You can get used to our voices if you're not a regular listener. Like I said, my name is Karen, and my fun fact is my best friend just started rewatching Buffy. She's seen it before, but it's been a really long time, and she started listening to the podcast. So I'm going to do a shout out to Deidre, and then I'm going to text her and tell her I did a shout out, but I'm not going to tell her which episode, because then she has to listen to all of them and not give up. So that's my evil master plan. But it's really cool. She keeps texting me, and she's like, oh my god, I can't believe like this happened. Did you remember when this person did this? And I was like, Deidre, that was like a year ago for me, and you're not being specific enough that I can understand what you're actually saying, so no, I have no idea what you're talking about. Then she gets frustrated, but it's fine. She's having fun. I'm glad. She still loves Drusilla so much, and I still have nothing to say about that. Okay, next up, let's hear from Caitlin, other super fan.
Okay, so as I have said on multiple episodes, I am doing nothing but working with my life lately. So my fun fact will be that I'm a terrible super fan and have not seen Angel all the way through. I've seen through somewhere in the fourth season.
I'm going to admit the same thing. I kind of jumped around a lot or something. I remember specifically not finishing the series and looking up what happened in the final episode because it was really stressing me out. So that's going to be interesting, but I'm planning on doing my homework and making sure that I'm as well-versed in Angel as I am in Buffy.
Yeah, it was airing at a weird time in my life. I had, like, moved time zones, and it was airing at a time that just didn't make sense for me to be watching TV, and I just ended up missing, like, the last, I don't know, season and a half, and even though I own all five seasons and have watched the earlier seasons repeatedly on Netflix, I've never watched the end of it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Cool. Well, we'll see what happens. All right. Half of our newbie team this week, Brittany, what have you been doing?
Hi. Well, today I'm podcasting with my dog because people are blowing stuff up because it's 4th of July weekend and he is a nervous wreck. But all day I've just been laying in bed watching the O.J. Simpson Made in America ESPN documentary, and it is amazing. And I have one part left that I'm going to finish tonight, and that will have been like 10 hours worth of watching O.J. today.
I have heard that is so good.
It is so good. It is really, it's very interesting and really well done.
And you said this is a documentary, so it's like 100% factual, right? Like,
yes.
It's not embellished.
Yeah, it's not the FX Ryan Murphy series, which I also watched all of and thought was great, but this is really good. I recommend it.
Cool. I may actually check that out because it's one of those things that, like, for me at least, and I've heard other people talk about this too, like, you know kind of what happened by osmosis, but, like, a lot of us were kind of too young to really get it, and now it's like I'd never went back and actually looked it up or anything, so I would like to watch something that tells me exactly what happened and all of the controversy and that sort of thing, so I'll have to put that on my to watch list. And last but not least, Kristen, what about you?
My fun fact is that for the first time in probably 4 years. I am off for the 4th of July, and I'm very excited about this. So tomorrow, well, I'm actually off on the 3rd. I work on the 4th, but I'm off for the fireworks that my family always goes to. So I'm very excited because I get to go and sit with them and do all of the fun 4th of July things that we usually do, like play cards and camp out in this giant field with, like, a dozen, you know, 3 dozen other families, and wait for the fireworks to start at 10 o'clock. So I'm just geeked. I like the 4th of July. It's good fun.
And this year, you also get to hang out with your amazing roommate on the 4th of July.
That's right.
Rub it in. Whatever.
I mean, I wasn't going to. That was all Karen. Yeah. I wasn't going to say anything, but, you know.
Oh, I was. I love lording it over people. Yeah. All right, let's jump right into Buffy. We're going to do Buffy first, then Angel, just like it aired. That's how everybody should be watching, too, especially for the crossover episodes. But Buffy episode 1, freshman. In this episode, Buffy is having a rough time in college because basic white boys ignore her at the bookstore, and Giles has decided his casual daywear should be pants optional. A vamp lady who preys on the weak is out for Buffy's blood, but when Xander comes back to town, Buffy's ego gets a boost, and she drops in on the vamp frat that's been stealing her stuff. In the end, her pals come through for her after all, and Giles comes back wearing pants. I mean...
Where's the lie?
Yeah. Giles not wearing pants, not the worst thing we've seen on this show. Okay, I want to talk first kind of in a general sense, and I'm going to do this for both episodes. We're starting season 4, obviously, and we've moved. We're not at high school anymore. Now we're on the college campus. Do you guys feel a difference in the vibe of this season, either in tone, Ariana puts in the doc, even the lighting she feels is different? Do you guys sense, like, a switch here?
Definitely. Like, it's less of the, this is a story about Buffy and her friends in high school, and it's more of a, wow, okay, Buffy's now on a college campus and has no idea what's going on, and it's not like high school where you kind of rule the roost and, you know, you go from being a senior where you know the layout and what you're doing and where you're going, and now she's this, you know, youngin who doesn't really know anything about her campus yet, and everything is bigger, and it just, yeah, the whole tone of the season feels different.
Yeah, I think that the world that Buffy is in feels bigger, and the problems, like the vampire problem, felt really small this week, and normally I'm used to, like, the world is gonna end, and that being the big, big problem, and now it's like, some people are going missing. It's not really a huge deal, but the world is going to eat you alive. Like, the actual real world is the big bad in this episode as opposed to the vampires. So I definitely got a feeling of a shift there, which I kind of liked. Even though season 4 is not everyone's favorite, as I've gathered, I did really enjoy the first episode.
Cool. What about you, Caitlin?
I definitely think there's a noticeable shift here, which makes a lot of sense because there's been a huge shift in Buffy's life, and it's a shift we all experience when we have a big life change, and I think it makes sense, and it's definitely noticeable. I would agree.
Yeah, I think a lot of characters right now have kind of changed roles. I think in a way Buffy and Willow have switched, you know. Willow is feeling very confident, whereas Buffy is not, and Willow's kind of, you know, the cool one, and Buffy is like, what do I do, and feeling very insecure. And it's nice to see that role reversal. Also, the fact that they're on campus now, completely different set, is like, you kind of have to get used to it because we've been in high school for 3 years and we know all of the haunts that they used to go to, and right now we're exploring just like Buffy is exploring, and it's going to be interesting to see the different aspects of that set and, you know, what we end up getting used to for these next few seasons or whatever. The biggest change for me comes with Willow's hair, which she chopped off, and it's much shorter and spikier now, but like, she looks super cute and I love it, and it just, it's a good look for her.
A plus hair game for sure.
Yes. Definitely. All right. And I think I want to kind of jump off of what Brittany was saying, in that the real world is kind of the big bad this time. I think that's absolutely true. And this episode's kind of depressing for like three quarters of it. I mean, at the end, it kind of gets a big, you know, fist pump because Buffy comes through and she kind of has this new attitude at the end. But for so much of it, she struggles so hard. And there's, I think, a difference between struggling against a demon that you don't know how to defeat and something that you can't really like vanquish, you know, like she has to deal with college and what is happening to her, and she just keeps falling flat time and time again. And you know, Kristen, do you like that? Do you like the fact that they're incorporating more of the real world into this now? And do you think it might be a theme for the rest of it? Or was this sort of just like, well, she's at college now, we kind of have to address that, but then we'll get back to the old game?
I'm sure it will play some sort of a role for at least the first half of season four, like Buffy kind of getting into the groove and figuring out exactly how this whole college thing's going to work. Like, I think it's going to remain the big bad in her life because A, she's not directly, it doesn't sound like she's directly on the Hellmouth anymore. Like, she's not directly in Sunnydale. So she'll have a little less, I would guess less vampire interaction, as well as just, yeah, she's got a lot of real world things that she was dying to get her hands on before and like be able to focus on. And now she's struggling with it. So it's like, you can tell she just needed, you know, she just needs to slay something. And she got the opportunity in this episode, but it took a little while for her world to kind of right itself. So yeah, I think the big bad real world is going to be around for a while, and we'll still get some vampire slayage, but it'll just kind of take a back seat until she gets comfy.
Yeah. And, you know, we were kind of talking about this earlier, the whole college thing, this show, I don't think it portrays it very well. I mean, I think that's sort of to be expected. They kind of have to make caricatures out of a lot of these characters and the situations, make them, you know, really hard and difficult. But I was just like, first of all, your dorm room would not be that big. That thing was huge. And secondly, like all those classes and the teachers being so mean on the first day, like I guess some classes would be like that, but generally that wasn't really my college experience. But I wanted to ask you guys, Ariana put it in here, but I'm very curious. So you guys like a go-getter like Willow, or did you just stay in your dorm room like Buffy your freshman year? Because I definitely just lived in my dorm room.
Well, I was lucky. I lived on the honors floor in the one dorm that had an honors floor. So I was like with my people. Like I was with a bunch of people who took all honors classes in high school and just wanted to like stay in their rooms and watch a movie, or, you know, we would do things together. We kind of stuck together. So I didn't do a whole lot my freshman year, but we, you know, we did go to football games and do some things. So I was kind of in between the two.
Yeah. I was telling Natalie this on Twitter the other day, cause she made a comment about when the new Harry Potter houses came out, like American schools don't have houses. My college had houses, and that really helped freshman year because our whole orientation was like battle of the houses. So you really had to get to know your house. And then you lived with those people. And you also, when you moved into your sophomore year dorms, it was, they like would join two college houses together. So there were like, you always had those people. Those were the people who were in your freshman seminar. Those were the people who were like in all the, they kind of like grouped you based on a class and roommate preferences. So my school did a really great job of like putting a bunch of like-minded type of people together. Plus I was on like a literary magazine there. So like I had that staff and people I hung out with and stuff like that. So that was like a complete opposite from me in high school. High school, I was like very, I want to stay home on the weekends. And in college I was like, oh, I have all of these people who are right outside my door. I'm actually going to talk to them. So I was not so much like a hermit. I was a hermit in my own house, but I had a bunch of people there with me.
I didn't really have a choice but to be out and about because I was on the softball team in college. So I was either in class or at practice. So when I wasn't there I was at home, but that was or in my room, usually because I had a lot of homework to catch up on. But I was always out with the team.
That's cool, though. I mean, you had things to do that incorporated you into, like, you know, getting out and everything. Meanwhile, I was, like, sitting in my dorm room being like, do I really have to go to the cafeteria? But I have a lot of granola bars under my bed, so. But just so you know, eventually I did get out there and, like, actually make friends. So not a complete hermit for 4 years. Just freshman year was a little rough. Hopefully Buffy gets a little bit better, becomes more comfortable with all of this. And, you know, she is meeting people. Of course, one of them ends up dying, which kind of sucks. But the other one is Riley. And before I ask Caitlin about Riley, I would like to know first impressions from the newbies. Brittany, you go first.
Was he the one she dropped the books on?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure. He was so classic 90s, this is the boy everyone's supposed to fawn over. That hair, oh my gosh. I was having serious Lizzie McGuire flashbacks with, like, what's his name? The boy that she's in love with on the Lizzie McGuire show. It was, his hair was like,
oh, the exact, Ethan Kraft.
Yes, his hair just reminded me of him so much. But he was, like, so plain and boring, and it was just supposed to, like, probably give Buffy a little, like, oh, right, like, I can move on from Angel and start to, like, try to make friends with other people. But he was so bleh. And when, was he a TA? Like, was he?
Yeah.
Okay. I watched this episode a long time ago, so.
Fair enough. And Kristen, what was your first impression of him?
Well, my first impression is I recognize that guy. What do I know him from? And it took me a long time, but I recognized him from the movie First Daughter with Katie Holmes when she played the daughter of the president. Don't ask. It's insane.
I remember that movie.
What?
I remember that movie.
Oh, thank God. Okay. Yeah, like, I totally recognized him, but I couldn't place where it was, so, like, I looked him up and figured it out, and I felt better. But no, Riley, yeah, he seems very much just the generic guy. I assumed that with his introduction that something with him and Buffy is gonna go on, but who knows what, and I'm sure we'll get into more of that at some point. But other than that, yeah, it was just kind of generic.
Okay. And of course, as super fans, Caitlin and I know exactly where this is going. We're not going to give anything away. But Caitlin, I was just wondering if you remember your first impressions of Riley.
I liked him. I was young and I liked bland white boys at the time.
I'm so glad you said that because that's exactly how I feel.
I've matured since, but at the time.
Me too.
Okay, good.
I'm glad we are on this page.
Yes, me too.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, he's cute. He is cute, and he's smart, and, you know, he can talk shop with Willow, and I think that's interesting. But, yeah, you know, we'll just kind of see what happens with it and how you guys end up feeling, whether it goes one way or another, or if you kind of just continue to be meh about it. Ariana put hashtag no chemistry here. I was wondering if anybody agrees with that.
Oh, yeah.
I thought they did. Like, when they were walking later, like, maybe not in that scene where they first met, but, like, later on when they were walking to class and he didn't really remember her and then just, you know, like, I thought they had something going on. Like, I believed that there could be something at some point. Who knows?
They did just meet, so.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. That's good to know. Let's talk about the adults a little bit in this episode.
Yes.
We don't see them a whole lot, but they both have pretty actually depressing interactions with Buffy. First of all, we have Giles, who is old, but definitely not out of the game. We meet Olivia, who I think we can all agree is pretty cool. I mean, we only see her for a little bit, but she seems like a nice person. And Giles is sort of, you know, Buffy, like, what can I do for you? You need to kind of figure this out on your own. I'm not going to babysit you anymore. Brittany, Did that make you mad? Did you understand where he was coming from? Just asking you first because I know how much you love Giles.
Thank you. Yes, I did see where he was coming from, but it was also, it did kind of take me off guard at first because for until the moment that Buffy decided where she was going to college, it was sort of like, you have this calling, you have to do it. Like, yes, it's going to be an adjustment, but, you know, you are never going to change your calling. But now it's like she it has to go through this other big change, and they're sort of like, okay, well, yeah, like, you have to figure that out on your own, whereas that's not how it should be. Like, she still needs someone to go to, and Giles clearly is just trying to live his life, but I don't, like, without Wesley, like, what else is he going to do? I don't understand where he was thinking that he was just going to, like, be off the hook and go on vacation because Buffy was, like, done. Like, was she not checking in with him about patrols or anything? Like, she was just kind of doing it by herself and he could just go on this extended vacation forever? I really did not get it. But at the same time, I was so happy for him because Olivia seems great and they were just so comfy together. Oh, it was cute, but him and Buffy, I was not into it. I'm like, first of all, put some clothes on. Second of all, like, you have an 18-year-old in your living room. Second of all, why don't you, like, yes, you're not her therapist, but you could also, like, you know, give her some comforting words.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between, you know, trying to distance yourself in order to help Buffy stand on her own two feet and then just being, like, indifferent toward what's happening with her. And I really don't think Giles is being indifferent. I think he was just kind of, first of all, caught surprised, but also he's unsure of his role right now, too. And the whole thing is very confusing, so we'll just have to end up seeing, you know, what happens with that. But, Kristen,
I have a question about Olivia, because I would think that she would have had to know who, or have an idea of who Buffy was before, like, Buffy showed up, because her reaction when she showed up was just like, oh, okay. Like, it wasn't even like, oh my gosh, I'm standing here with no pants on, probably in Giles' shirt, and I'm just going to say, okay, like, I'm totally fine with this young blonde woman being in Rupert's living room at this moment. So I'm assuming that she has to know either what Giles does or, like, who Buffy is to Giles, but I'm curious to, like, figure out if she knows that Buffy is a Slayer or she just knows that, like, Buffy and Giles have this, like, weird father-daughter relationship type thing.
Well, she calls him Ripper, doesn't she?
I thought she just called him
Rupert.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that was wrong.
I heard Ripper, too.
Well, because I was under the impression she didn't know about, like, the Slayer-ness of it all, because didn't he, like, stop Buffy from saying something about, like, the vampires? Like, I could have sworn she was about to say something and he, like, stops her and keeps it from going to, like, a scary supernatural place and keeps it generic. So I was under the impression that this girl had no idea what was going on.
I just looked up the transcript and she does call him Ripper.
Interesting. That's interesting. I really thought she said Rupert.
Yeah, so did I.
So we'll just kind of leave that on the table then.
Well, now that kind of takes my question away. that answers it.
But how much does she know? I guess that's the question.
Yeah. Now.
True.
Yeah. Kristen, were you mad at Giles? Did you understand where he was coming from?
Oh, I was pissed at Giles, but mostly because of the, I'm always here for you, but you need to figure this out on your own. I was like, you can't say that. If you're there for her, she's coming to you for help. Like, if you're there for her, then help her. She's reaching out right now. Like, I was, like, I could not understand what he was trying to get at. He was like, I'm always here for you, but you need to do this on your own. And I'm like, those are contradictory statements, and they make no sense. Like, I want the real Giles back. What is wrong with you? But, you know, by the end of the episode, he kind of came to his senses. It almost sounded, by the end, like what he said when he came back, it almost sounded like he thought he was supposed to, like, send her out on her own. Like, he's not with the whatchamacallit, the order or whatever. But it sounded like he was still trying to, like, almost play her a little bit and make her think she was on her own. And he was taking a step back, but then, like, he couldn't do it. Like, he had to come back. There's, you know, no way he could just leave her be. So I wasn't really sure if maybe he was, you know, kind of putting up a little bit of a front to see how she'd do all on her own. And when she was seemed to be having way more trouble, he just couldn't take the panic anymore. I don't know.
Can I defend Giles here, please?
Yes. Yes.
Because I don't have any problem with him. I feel like he is sort of the awkward father figure here. Like, he's basically like her father in this way, and he knows that she has gone off to college, which is when parents are supposed to let their kids go, be out of the nest, start falling and picking themselves back up instead of coming back and every time that there's an issue running to their parents for their parents to fix. Now it's time for them to start learning to fix their own mistakes. So it seems to me like Giles was kind of feeling in the moment like the best thing he can do to help her is to encourage her to act on her own, because he has already taught her what she needs to know. And he's right. She does know what she needs to do to deal with these vampires, as we see with her and Xander later, that they know how to track them down and everything. So I think he's sort of being the parental figure of, now you're on your own, so it's time for you to start figuring these things out on your own because you're an adult by our society standards. But at the end, I think he just felt guilty and was sort of like the parent who's like, oh, you messed up. Here, have an extra allowance, even though you spent all your money on beer.
Yeah. I think everybody is redefining their roles in their own lives and their relationships with each other right now. Going to college kind of disrupted their system. And I think that Giles means well. And I absolutely agree with you, Caitlin, that he did teach her everything she needs to know. And you're right that she did know what to do. She just got scared and then she wanted to fall back on the net that is Giles. And it's important to establish as early on as possible that, like, you don't need that safety net anymore. You know what to do. You can do it all on your own. But I like that, you know, despite that, in the end, like, he's still supportive of her and he's not just gonna, you know, kick her to the curb or anything. He still loves her very, very much. And I think it was kind of a necessary thing to happen. It just unfortunate, I think, that it kind of had to go about that way because Buffy was hurt. And not only was she hurt by that, but it was this constant, like, boom, boom, back and forth. Like, we see her go back home and her mom has already taken over her room, and like, that sucks. Like, that's so sad.
Yeah, I think a part of me just expected Giles to kind of pull a Mr. Feeny and like show up on campus with a new job and ta-da, here we go. Like, I think I just expected that. So like, when it was the total opposite of that, it just shook me off guard. Like, I didn't expect for that to be how Giles would react to Buffy. Like, and I think that may have been what triggered just not understanding where he was coming from. But, you know, by the end of the episode, he seems back to his old Giles-y ways, so.
Yeah, and I think that they handle him well at the end. Like, Buffy wasn't like, oh, this is what happened, and we figured it out, and I did X, Y, and Z. She sort of just ignores his presence and, like, just keeps walking. Like, it's already over, and he's like, oh, they're this way? Okay, I'll walk this way with you. And little does he know that it's all completely taken care of, and she did it, but she's not there to gloat about it or be like, see, I could do everything without you and make him feel bad. She's just like, all right, you're figuring out where you are. I'm also now figuring out where I am.
Yeah, and I think that's fair on both accounts. Before we get into kind of the end and some other things, I just want to ask really quickly, how did you guys feel about the bad guys in this episode, the vamps? Because I think we don't always get vampires with really strong personalities, and when we do, they tend to stick around for a little while. In this case, they didn't. But I think that they could have picked any old vampires or anything, but these ones I feel like had a story, and that made it much more interesting to me.
I liked them. I thought it was really clever the way that they would get their victims, especially because they pick on the people who already seem like they're kind of outcasted and no one would really miss because they didn't make an impression on anyone yet. And they would move all their stuff out and, like, just them going through it. And the pinning of the posters was so funny because if you walk down, like, any college hallway, everyone has the same posters.
A Starry Night.
Oh, it was
so
funny. But yeah, just them, like, and then going through their stuff because they're very, like, materialistic, which is weird in a way. I don't know why I would think that, like, vampires shouldn't care about that stuff, but these did, and I thought it was really well done story, even for a one-off story.
I mean, Sunday was very fashion conscious.
She was.
Cool. All right. Last thing on our list for this episode is Xander. Xander comes back from his road trip, or, well, I guess he didn't really end up having a road trip, kind of tells Buffy what went down with everything. And he's the one this episode that is offering Sage advice. He kind of rallies her back up to do what she needs to do. And I think it's really interesting that this role landed on Xander's shoulders, but at the same time, because of the preoccupation of Willow and Giles and Oz with their own lives and campus and kind of living outside of Buffy's bubble, it makes sense that he is the one to do this. But just because we've had issues before with Xander and him coming off a certain way, I'm curious if any of you guys felt like this was out of character or if you liked seeing him in this role.
I like it. I was going to say, I really like Xander. I mean, I think he seems like he's grown a bit throughout this summer, and maybe it's just the fact that he had to, like, work his way out of his own problem and, you know, like, he was all on his own and had to kind of pull himself up. He seems like he's learned a bit and has aged and grown a little bit over the summer, so maybe it's something to do with that, but he just does seem a little bit different to start season four, and it's a good different.
Cool. Caitlin?
Yeah, I think he has gotten his priorities maybe a little bit sorted out since we last saw him, but it's not totally there, which we see when he makes some uncomfortable comments, but they don't actually detract from the good message that he gives. And I just kind of laugh because, you know, he's saying, I think, what would Buffy do? And in Supernatural, you have the ghost facers who are like, what would Buffy do? So I love that. But I don't know. I think he's really great. And I think he's really the only one of their group who makes sense to give her this message, because everyone else is figuring out what their new roles are. And Xander's is the role that has changed the least compared to everybody. So he is able to support her from the old role that she had, I guess. I mean, it's a continuing role as the Slayer, but he isn't seeing the changes as much as everybody else is, and he's not caught up in them. So he can support her from that position of kind of where they were coming from, which I think works nicely.
Yeah, that's a great point. Brittany, how did you feel about Xander's role in this episode?
I thought it was fitting, especially because he doesn't really have a place right now. He's kind of come back and, you know, no one that he knew is around hanging out at his old stomping grounds until he runs into Buffy, and he didn't get to go off and have this great adventure like everyone else is just starting there, so he doesn't even have that to fall back on. So for him to figure out a way to get Buffy kind of comfortable with herself again, like seeing, oh, I am still the Slayer, I am still that person who got that umbrella at, you know, prom. Was it prom? Yeah, prom. And I am now in this new place where I have to figure out some other things. I still can fall back on my old identity. And for Xander to do that, a guy who's constantly trying to change his ways to be cool and be accepted and be part of the group, I thought that that was pretty fitting and gave him a little boost because we've kind of been ragging on him for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. I said this on Twitter too, but I cried so much when Jonathan made that speech with the umbrella. God, it was ugly. And then they just snap it, and I was so mad.
Oh, that is horrible when she steps on it. Oh, it's the worst.
But Buffy gets pissed, and then she just goes at it. So that was kind of nice. All right, let's jump into favorite scenes. My favorite scene, it was sort of a combination of just basically all of the art history jokes, because I'm an art history nerd, and between the Klimt and Monet poster race and Buffy confusing reconnaissance with Renaissance, it was very close to my heart, and I just died laughing. It was so good, so funny. Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
So mine is kind of coming from what we were just talking about when Sunday snaps the Class Protector Award and Buffy just changes and she's like, it's hurt, not broken. And she like decks her and does the awesome stake twirl and just throws it and stakes her the whole, when she takes charge of the fight, it's so badass.
And at like Sunday, it was just like, she looks down at the hole in her chest now and she's like, oh crap. And then she dusts. I love it when they have like a little something to say or do right before they die. It just gets me every time. I find it hilarious.
And the other guy was like, whoa.
Yeah. That guy was great. Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
Obviously Giles having a life and, you know, not being depressed that Buffy's gone. He's like, well, all right, I have all this free time. I'm going to have some friends over and have a no pants party and drink in the daytime. And it was just refreshing to see Giles kind of relaxed.
Yeah. Kristen, you had a Giles scene too.
Yeah, I liked Giles like showing up on campus at the, you know, post fight with his weapons and like he's got his glasses on and he's running in to save the day. And it was adorably Giles, like, you know, back in the game, and it was already taken care of. So Willow's like, take this box, please, because she's carrying two and everybody else isn't. And yeah, it was just a really cute little scene. And I really liked that.
Yeah, why don't you give, you know, the Slayer, the superhero, two boxes? Let poor Willow.
Willow is mighty. She didn't need help. She is mighty.
She is small, but she is mighty. All right, in terms of favorite lines, mine were kind of silly, but the first one is from the stoner vampire, because he just goes, are we going to fight or is this just going to be a monster sarcasm rally? Because that was so funny, because Sunday was sassy, just like Buffy. And the other one was when Buffy says, let me answer that with a headbutt. And the reason why I picked these two is because I feel like, as amazing as season 3 was, and unfortunately it didn't get to be on a lot of episodes there, but I really love season 3. It got very dark and it got very life and death in a lot of episodes between Faith and between the mayor's whole shtick. And maybe it just didn't catch me the right way with some of those other episodes, but I feel like now we're kind of getting back into those silly, like, oh, let me make a sarcastic remark right before I kill you moments. And I know it's cheesy. I know some people don't like it, but for me, it's just like quintessential Buffy. And it was nice to kind of get back into that and to just see her, like you were saying, Caitlin, during that fight, take control. And at this point, she's, you know, fighting for her life. And she's like, all right, I have time to make a sassy remark. And she does. It was great. And Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
So mine was a Buffy sassy remark when she's being awesome in the fight. So she says to Sunday, when you look back at this in the 3 seconds it'll take you to turn to dust, I think you'll find the mistake was touching my stuff. I love it.
Brittany?
Mine was, if you're looking to coast, I recommend Geology 101. That's where the football players are, when her psychology professor says that, because that we used to call it Rocks for Jocks at school. So it just really resonated with me. I was like, that is one thing that does translate perfectly to college from TV.
Wow. I actually took a geology course in high school for college credit, and it was very difficult. I mean, we got to go on a lot of field trips, which was awesome, but it was, like, intense. So I was like, aw, that makes me sad. But Rocks for Jocks is just awesome.
Yeah, because we had to have a natural science and a regular science, and that could cross over and fulfill both. And that's why all the football players would take it, because they were all, like, business majors. And so they just called it Rocks for Jocks because it was easy and it killed two requirements with one class.
With one stone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Mine's between Xander and Oz when Xander's, like, greeting everyone and including Buffy's, like, rando roommate who he doesn't know and, like, hugs everyone. And he looks at Oz and says, "Do we hug?" And Oz says, "I think we're too manly." It's just, I love Oz. And it was such a cute moment, and I love them.
Oz. Where would we be without Oz?
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into episode 1 of Angel. I'm very excited to discuss this. In this episode, Angel is a dark knight, and so he needs some sad cello music to help him defeat evil. He meets a nice blonde waitress who looks exactly like Buffy when she was Sad Anne, but she dies because Angel needs to realize his full potential. Meanwhile, Cordelia is slumming it on Sunset, trying out the self-help guides to secret herself out of poverty. She meets a pervy businessman, but surprise, he's actually a thirsty vampire, so when Angel... Oh, God, I can't pronounce this word. Defenestrates?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay. So when Angel defenestrates the vamp, she offers to become the other half of his buddy cop team. There is also a half-demon man who pretends to be useful, but is in all likelihood a non-existent Jiminy Cricket figment of Angel's conscious. So Angel, I'm very curious to get initial reactions. First of all, I want to talk about the intro and the music, because I believe both Brittany and Kristen not into it. Am I correct?
Yeah, really did not think that was going to be a point of contention. People feel very strongly about the cello music in Angel, and I was not prepared for that.
Yeah, I was not a fan of the theme song. I don't know why. It just, like... The first time it came on, I kind of wondered if it was, like, a replacement one, like Netflix and DVDs did with Dawson's Creek. Like, they replaced a very iconic theme song with this other rando one, and so I was wondering if this was the right one. And then, like, people who I know were watching it on Netflix were all excited, and I'm like, okay, this must be the theme song. I don't like it. I don't know. Something just isn't right.
And I think it's like watching Buffy, you have that, like, that rock intro and you're like, yeah, I'm set up for Buffy. I know what kind of character Buffy's going to be. And I know what kind of character Angel is, so this music did not get me excited to watch Angel.
And so perfect for who he is.
It is, but it doesn't help me. Like, it does not make me feel any better about having to watch 45 minutes of just Angel.
Well, you didn't like the music in Legend of Korra either, Brittany. So.
I did not. I was not a fan of the music in Legend of Korra. But I also not a fan of Korra. So... The person, the character, loved the show. So maybe it has something to do with it. I don't know.
Caitlin, would you like to defend the intro?
I didn't realize there were people that wouldn't like this intro because I adore it. When I hear the Buffy intro, I like air guitar and I air cello with the Angel theme song. Because I love it. It's just like you get the vibe from the first episode that it's a more kind of like noirish show, and the music fits that very well of the tone that we see in the first episode. Like, we even get like the noir voiceover and everything, so it's very much in fitting with the tone of the show that we're getting. But I adore that. I have a thing for cello music, so I adore this theme song.
I can't say that I'm, like, super passionate about it or anything, but I like it. I wonder if that's just because, like, we're used to it. It represents Angel in our mind. Like, it's not brand new. Maybe I didn't like it when I first saw it. I don't know. I think that you cannot replace the Buffy theme song. I mean, it's so iconic and it's so good that I'm wondering, you know, did they struggle to come up with something for Angel that would be just as iconic. I don't think they got there with this version, but it is what it is. I think you're absolutely right in that it sets the tone for this show because it is definitely a noir kind of show. I mean, you have this like guy walking down an alley in the dark, and of course he's a vampire, so like that's just what they do, but it's this voiceover kind of detective-y weird combination that just works for it, and I feel like that intro represents that, whether you like it or not. Like, I think it is a good representation. So as the show continues, I'll be interested to see if you guys come to like it, if you just come to not hate it, which might be nice too, but you know, it's just the intro, so doesn't really matter. But,
or they'll just skip it on.
Yeah, or they'll just skip it. But Brittany, what do you think about the first episode overall and how you think Angel's going to play out, like the actual tone of the show? Are you into it?
I wasn't until Angel went to the party, I think, because that Angel sense of humor from like season one of Buffy started to come out, and I could be like, I got a little bit more on board with who he was, and like, oh, he's not going to be so mopey as long as he has something to do and he's like around people and we're not just watching him take an elevator down one flight of stairs when he has a walkable staircase next to it. That annoyed me so much, of his like demon lair that he's living in right now. And I think that I will like it the more he interacts with people. And I think Cordelia is going to be a huge part in that, because once she showed up and he got a couple of like quips in, even with Doyle, he was able to like say a couple of things here and there that were funny. But as long as that side of Angel really shines through and we're not dealing with like, you know, him sitting on rooftops all the time looking over the city of angels, haha, I guess it'll be better.
Yeah, I think that's really important distinction to make, because Cordelia brings a light to, she brought a light to Buffy that I think was very different from the other characters, but she's also bringing something to Angel that is just completely her own. And I think you're right in that the first part of this episode, I'd say like even three quarters of it, you basically just have Sad Angel. And Sad Angel is boring. I think most of us agree with that. Angel can be very, very funny and very charismatic when he wants to be. But when he's sad, he's just like, you just want to pity him. And that's not, you don't want to watch five seasons of that. However, when Cordelia comes in, when he sort of has this mission, you see him like, yeah, he starts making the jokes and he starts being a little bit lighter. And I think it gives him this burst of personality that hopefully you guys will really take to. But it's that some of those moments where he's just ridiculous, I'm like, how do I not remember that this is Angel? Like, I just remember him being sad all the time and very stoic. And he's not. He's absolutely ridiculous.
I was in Missoula during the Depression. I mean, during my Depression. I was depressed in Missoula.
Or when he jumps into the wrong car. Like, I died during that scene.
He's so much funnier than you think he's going to be, and I love it.
And I think that's just really important for this show, you know? I think that's going to bring some levity that, like, it really needs. So I'm hoping that you guys are into it. Kristen, we talked about it a little bit, but I think you're excited, yeah. Right?
I really enjoyed the first episode. Like, you could kind of see it going down a similar road while Blondie was still, like, alive and was taking up all of his time, but after she died and things kind of took a turn, you definitely saw, like, where the show was going. And, yeah, Angel is really funny. He just didn't really get enough opportunities to be really funny before, and I'm glad that we're going to get more of that. And I'm totally here for Angel Action Star, because every, like, fight scene in this, he was, like, on point. Like, I feel like he may have fought on Buffy, but I don't know if it just wasn't as, like, impressive or what. But I was definitely here for Angel Action Star.
Yes, he's like Neo from The Matrix with his long cloak, and I'm just like so into it, you guys. Love it so much. Speaking of Blondie, she plays the mother on Scream, FYI. If anybody watches that, I don't think a lot of people watch it. Yes. She's That's Emma's so mother. Weird. Yeah. She looks really young and different in this, but like her hair was super cute. But her voice was like the same. That's part of, well, Mai told me on Twitter, Unforgiven on Twitter, she told me. And I was like, oh, you're right. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I definitely recognize her voice. So that's pretty cool for me because I really like Scream. But anyway, let's talk about Doyle because he's a newcomer. And Ariana seems to think that he is a figment of Angel's imagination. Newbies, do you agree with that?
I mean, I wasn't getting a Sixth Sense vibe. Like, he wasn't really there. But, you know, it could be true. I can definitely see it now. I just thought he was fun and Irish and adorable and whatever half-demon thing was going on, that's totally weird. But I'm assuming we'll get more about that later.
I just love that he sneezed and they popped out. Oops!
And there's a lot of good fun that I think the two of them can have. I think if Doyle is a figment of Angel's imagination, that will be really interesting. But if he's not, he brings out, like, the lighter side. Like, he's kind of makes Angel a little less broody. So I think that's good fun.
Mm. Caitlin, do you remember first impressions of Doyle? Did you trust him? Did you think he was shady?
I liked him all along. And it would be very hard for a figment of Angel's imagination to drive his car with Cordelia in the front seat, but okay. I mean, I like him. I like that he brings some levity like Cordelia does, and I'm very intrigued by the idea of Cordelia and Doyle interacting more and then, like, forcing Angel to lighten up. I think that could be very entertaining.
Yeah, he has jokes, and I think Angel needs those in his life, so it's going to be an interesting team up. It's pretty cool. And of course, you know, as we're talking about, Cordy shows up. And I think this is going to be really exciting for a lot of people. Ariana particularly, because her love for Cordy knows no bounds. But I think a lot of the newbies, you guys have really gotten into Cordy. And I think this was a really good switch for her. She's great on Buffy, absolutely. But I think Angel, the show, lets her kind of stretch a little bit more. And it's going to be cool to see how she interacts with Angel in particular, but other characters coming onto the show. Anybody not down with this? Or are you really happy that she came over here?
I'm really happy that she came over. I think it's going to help me watch Angel. Because, as everyone is well aware, he's not my favorite person on the planet. But having Cordy around, I think, is an interesting way to also tie it back in to Buffy, because Cordelia has more connections with, like, that group on Buffy than Angel really did. Like, yeah, he knew everyone, and him and Willow kind of got along and stuff, but it was really just, it would be more about him going back for Buffy as opposed to anything else. And having Cordy around, I loved when she said that she was living, like, you know, on a little condo on the beach. And I bought it. Like, I bought that whole line because I was like, oh, maybe they got some sort of, like, weird, like, you know, money back from her father not paying taxes. But then to see her in, like, the same type of situation, like, that she was in back home, where she was really left with nothing and not really succeeding at stuff that she normally was just really good at. It was really interesting that I fell for it, because Cordy does project such, like, a, you know, a higher vision of herself to the world, and to have her come down on hard times and realize that she should be working with Angel because it is something that she's good at, and, like, falling back on that type of role was just a really good way to set up her story with Angel, because I didn't know how it was going to work.
Yeah, and I think this situation that she's currently in really humanizes her. I think a lot of us have grown to love Cordy for who she is, but if you didn't love her, I think this sort of brings her down a notch and makes her more relatable, because now she's not this person that's kind of out of reach, that is just there to, like, you know, pick on the group and be one of the funny ones. She's there as a person who is struggling and is trying her best to keep up appearances, but, you know, she's barely hanging on. And I think, especially in the end there, when she's like, you know, I'm going to do this, this, and this, you know, if you'll have me, her confidence has been shattered. She puts on a good face, but she's scared and she's lonely. And I think knowing Angel and, you know, teaming up with him now is something that she desperately needs in her life. And I am very excited to see how that affects her, how that affects Angel, you know, both of them. But I think that Cordy being on the show, and especially the consistency from Buffy to Angel, the shows, with this whole, like, she has nothing now plot line, was a really smart move, and I'm really glad that they kept going with that.
And it just makes logistical sense, since she was not going to go to UC Sunnydale. Like, there was no logical reason for her to do that, but she's far too much of a star, as it were, to lose her completely.
Yeah, and it would be weird if everybody went to UC Sunnydale. Like, it kind of makes sense that some of them would go elsewhere, and it just so happens that Cordy decided LA was the place for her. Like, I like Cordelia, and I like her and Angel, like, teaming up. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
And Cordelia is no longer this victim. I mean, unfortunately, in this episode, she does sort of play the victim, but at the same time, she knows she's up against a vampire. She figures it out. And, like, that was just such a great moment for her. And even though she does have to be rescued by Angel, I think it's the start of something that puts her in a bit more power. And we see that at the end of Buffy as well, when she stakes the vampire. So I think having Cordelia in the know and part of the group is something that we saw here and there on Buffy, but is obviously going to come more into play now, and that is very exciting for her character. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about logistics, because honestly, like, I usually don't pick apart television shows and get into the science and that sort of thing, but that said, this show is going to be very interesting because Angel's a vampire. He can't go out in the daytime. That's a huge thing that they're going to have to work around. Obviously, they'll be able to, the more, you know, like, Cordelia's human and she can go out into the daylight and do things, but Angel works at night, basically. Luckily, that's when a lot of terrible things happen, but as we see in this episode, not always. And Ariana asks this question that I was asking myself: how did Angel get into the building if it was daytime? Does he have, like, this underground network?
Yeah, he's using the sewers, because he popped up out of the sewer to come back from the library when he was checking on Blondie. He, like, popped up out of the sewer, so I just assumed he was, like, using either the sewer system or some sort of tunnel system under the city to get around during the day. And once he got in the building, just kind of avoided the sunlight.
I thought he was coming back from his underground lair, like the one that was directly underneath him.
See, I thought he went to the library with all of the computers and stuff. Like,
that's the impression I got as well.
Is that where he was? Okay.
Yeah. And, like, that was at night, but I think he was still trying to avoid, like, being seen or something. So I just assumed that was what was going on. I don't know.
Well, he comes back. I think he leaves at night, but he comes back because he spent the whole night doing research into Russell and Tina.
Yes.
So he comes back in the morning because he gets back right as she's waking up. So he has to come through the sewers because the sun has come up.
Okay, I must have like blinked and missed the connection between the two, because I definitely missed that. But that's good to know. That answers that question. I still think it's going to be interesting to see how they work around the daylight thing. I mean, because obviously that is a weakness of his, and maybe they'll continue to address it. Maybe they won't. I don't know what would be better, because it'd be getting pretty annoying if every episode he was like, oh, I can't go outside. Can you, like, do it for me?
Or he drives around in that, like, blacked out car that Spike had.
Yeah. But even that was, like, a crappy system. Very dangerous. And last but not least, the phone call from 401 in Buffy. Mystery solved. It was Angel who called Buffy but decided not to say anything to her.
So sad, I guess.
It's very much in his character to, like, call and hang up. Like, I don't know. It's just Angel. And he misses her, so he needed to hear her voice, but, you know, didn't want to bug her. Plus, he called the house, and he knew she was at college, so I don't know what he was, like, hoping for.
Well, he probably doesn't have any other number for her.
True. That's right. Cell phones. Nah. That's a newer thing.
Seeing what happens.
Yeah. I think this is just also important to show that the shows are going to remain linked episode by episode.
Yes. And I think it would be ridiculous if, you know, Angel moved over to his own show and, like, never thought about Buffy, never tried to reach out to her. There's got to have, like, there has to be that connection. And so I'm really glad that they did this. As Caitlin just reminded me, there's something else we should probably talk about, which I guess it's probably not important, but, you know, I'll just humor her. It's fine. We see the lawyer dudes and all that jazz going on, Wolfram and Hart. I think that's obviously setting up for something bigger. But, I mean, Caitlin, is there anything you can say about this?
I mean, just that it seems like we'll probably see them again since we, like, focus on the name card that the one lawyer tries to give Angel. And he actually, and he pulls out his high-tech cell phone to call somebody and says that there's a new player in town, referring to Angel. So it seems like these guys are probably going to pop up again, which it's interesting that we're moving to LA and potential conflict with lawyers. Lawyers who work with monsters, because they were very clearly aware that Russell was a vampire.
Yeah.
So and what he was up to.
From twisted politicians to twisted, creepy lawyer guy. I buy it.
It's not a huge leap.
No.
Yeah. So that's cool. What do you guys think of this? I mean, I guess we don't necessarily know, like, if they're all human or not, or what's going on, but what do you think of this kind of mix of potentially human bad guys with vampires, or, you know, maybe, like, different species working together or something, or whatever? Like, clearly it's not just setting up vampires, which was, we've seen demons in Buffy, obviously, but it's very focused on vampires for obvious reasons. Already in Angel, we're getting demons and other creatures right from the get-go, and I think that that's going to play into Angel, and just wondering what you guys think of that.
I think it's a smart move, because I think that the vampire versus his own kind storyline could really, like, be played out quickly on this series, so to set up from the get-go that there are other species working together, and it's not just going to be about, like, oh, well, you're a vampire, how come you're, you know, killing your own kind? How can you do that? Come back over. You were once the great vampire. Like, all that stuff, like, that would get old pretty quickly. So to have Angel having to figure out, like, what these other people are capable of and what their weaknesses are, it sort of gives that Buffy vibe, where she would go to Giles and the team would sit down and they'd figure out what's going on, and that now exists in Angel, because other than that, you know, you could just be like, oh, Angel, in your 200 plus years dealing with vampires and being on Earth, did you ever come across this type of vampire? And I don't think he is the type of person to be a go-to, like, oh, I've come across this before, here's how we solve it type of character. So I'm interested in that. I am also interested to see if there are actual humans involved, because, you know, we had that huge thing with Faith and her killing an actual human, and to have that happen here, like, what would they do? It's not like killing a demon or a vampire. Mm-hmm. So,
and how would that affect Angel, considering he's tempted to drink human blood?
Yep.
But he also doesn't have, like, the same code to necessarily live by. Like, he's not a slayer. He's a vampire. So, like, it would, you know, it could kind of play into the what more do you expect kind of thing, too. So, yeah, seeing how they handle, like, a human threat is definitely something I'm intrigued by.
All good questions. All right, let's jump right into favorite scenes and start wrapping this up. My favorite scene, I already talked about it, was Cordy freaking out that Russell was a vampire. She figured it out, and God, that scene was just so gratifying. I loved it so much, because you think, oh, no, you know, she has no idea what she's gotten into. And then, boom, she figures it out. And like Ariana says, it gives her some street cred, and it's really great. Caitlin?
So mine was Angel being a boss at the end of the episode, and when he just busts into the law firm and puts his foot on Russell's chair and just, can you fly? And then kicks him out of the window. It's so good. It's such a badass moment. And then he just, guess not, and walks off. And then you have the empty chair hitting the ground. I love everything about it.
Yeah. The empty chair hitting the ground, I think, was just, I don't know, it was brilliant. And I kept thinking, like, I wonder what people think just happened. Like, maybe somebody just got really mad and threw their chair out the window or something.
Or a movie was being filmed.
Yeah.
L.A.
You never know. Brittany, that kind of ties into your favorite scene.
Yeah, mine is when Angel was at the party and they, like, the guy came up to him, the agent, and was just like, you're an actor? And he's like, no. And he goes, I wasn't asking. I was, like, telling you you're an actor. So when you want a job, just call me. And I thought that was great. Also, we were watching camera footage and Angel was on it. How is it? Don't they not show up on film?
I don't think they're supposed to.
Like, in the beginning of the party, I was like, oh, maybe she'll go back and, like, watch it later and see it. But she wouldn't have seen him on that camera. That bugged me a little bit, but not a big deal.
No, yeah. Okay. Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
I liked the whole, like, mansion scene from Cordy, like, figuring out what Russell was, to Angel just kind of walking out of the darkness and, like, taking him down and escaping. Like, that whole thing, that whole sequence was really, really fun. And, yeah, it was kind of where the Angel action star thing kind of popped into my brain. And, yeah, I was definitely a fan. It's good fun.
All right. And favorite lines. Mine is when they pan to Angel's in Angel's room, and they pan to, like, the weapons hanging on his wall. And he just goes, I have relationship issues, too. It's just like, it was so funny, but, like, so depressing. And I don't know. I just really liked it.
He's the best when he's deadpan.
Oh, it works so good. Caitlin.
So mine was during Kristen's favorite scene, when Angel comes out of the darkness and Cordelia just, like, lights up and she goes, you don't know who he is, do you? Oh boy, you're about to get your ass kicked. I just love that immediate confidence, like, oh, you don't even know.
She's so proud of him. It's beautiful. And Brittany.
Mine was from Doyle when he was talking to Angel, and he says, look, high school's over, boy. It's time to make with the grown-up talk. Because Angel, for up until this point, has really only communicated with, like, high school people. And so now he's got to, like, you know, step up his game, and it's sort of like Doyle being like, okay, we're not at Sunnydale anymore. Like, we have to treat issues a little bit differently now.
It's definitely a meta line.
Yeah. That and like Doyle's like entire recap of Angel's life, I thought was just brilliant because it's like, okay, now you're up to speed if you never watched Buffy and just want to watch Angel.
But at the same time, I was really impressed by like how natural it was. Like it was clearly an info dump for that exact reason that you just stated, but he did it in a way, like they wrote it in a way where it one wasn't boring, and two, there was like just enough commentary where it like made it really funny and an actual part of the story. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thought they did that really well.
It showed that Doyle knew everything, which is like, how did he find that out? That's kind of strange.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And lastly, Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Mine comes from Angel, and it's in the scene with Angel at the party after he talks to Cordy, and she goes, like, I have to go talk to people who, like, really matter or something. And then Angel says, it's nice that she's grown as a person. I kind of agree with Ediana. She put a point earlier in the doc. Like, I think Angel just finds her, like, entertaining and kind of charming. Like, I think he doesn't not like Cordia. He doesn't like Cordy. He just finds her really, really funny and, you know, different than the other humans he's come across. So I really love them. And yeah, it was just such a great little scene. So cute.
All right. Well, as usual, you can contact us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. If you would like to send in some emails, please remember that we are spoiler free. So either heavily note your spoilers or keep the spoilers out of there altogether so our newbies don't get ruined. And you can hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypeable.com or visit us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we always appreciate iTunes reviews, especially 5-star iTunes reviews. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will help you sort out the financials at your spiffy new detective agency.
Thanks, Cordy.
No problem.
Aww, that's cute.
All right, let's jump into listener feedback before we head out of here. First on Twitter, we have Laura saying, I'm a Buffy superfan, but Angel newbie. I have only seen 6 episodes, spoiler reasons. So excited to be newbies with this show. I think that's really interesting. And honestly, it's kind of a common theme. I'm seeing a lot of people who are saying, watch Buffy, never watched Angel, but they're joining us as a newbie. So that's kind of exciting. Caitlin, you want to take this next one?
All right. Emmy Foss says, I just want to keep watching Angel, but I'm going to follow with Rewatchable, even if it kills me to stop after 1 episode every week. Yeah, and that's going to get harder.
Yeah. Kristen and I were talking about this earlier, too. She's like, I just want to keep watching.
Yeah, like with 2 episodes of Buffy, I at least felt like I got enough to like quench the thirst. But 1 episode of each a week is going to get incredibly hard.
It's like actually watching it on TV.
Yeah, like who does that?
Sucks.
So retro.
And just for the record, we did amend our schedule recently, and I added in all the new dates, and it's extended us. Watching Angel has extended us a full year of the podcast, so I really hope you guys love us, because we're sticking around for a while. It's going to be fun, though. It's going to be great. Lots of things to discuss. Brittany, would you like to get Shauna's?
Sure. This one's from Shauna Evans, who says, can you fly? Never watched an episode of Buffy before Angel, and that scene hooked me forever. Loved this show from the get-go. I think it's interesting to see the people who watched Angel, like, alone and never watched Buffy. Because I don't know if I would have... Well, first of all, didn't know Angel was a TV show before we started this podcast. but I think it would be weird to not have watched Buffy.
Yeah, especially since that was on for 3 seasons prior. Yeah. I mean, that's quite a substantial amount of time. But, you know, who knows how people ended up falling into Angel, Buffy, anything like that. So who knows? Maybe they're just, well, I was going to say, maybe they're just a David Boreanaz super fan, but then they would have turned into Buffy anyway. So who knows? Okay. Hypeable comments. Kristen, would you like this first one?
Sure. The first one comes from April, and she says, "Hey, guys, season 3 is officially in the books. Looking back, I feel like season 3 has been the strongest season so far, and that the showrunners are starting to get more creative with the episodes. Example, the Zeppo ep. I'm interested to hear the discussion for season 4. While it's not my favorite season, I will say that the season 4 finale is my favorite finale episode of the entire show. I'm also super excited that you guys are starting Angel. Can't wait to listen."
And different Laura on Hypeable says, "Well, I didn't really want to rewatch Angel, but I definitely don't want to miss out on any discussions you guys will have for upcoming episodes. However, I think a rewatch may actually be good for me. I watched Buffy and Angel the first time together, and I was so into Buffy that it felt more like a chore watching Angel because all I wanted to do was get to the next Buffy episode. I don't think I really gave it a chance. I think I will enjoy it much more this time around and come out with a newfound appreciation of it." Honestly, I'm really hoping that happens. And I think especially Natalie and I, and I'm sure some of the other super fans too, have kind of sometimes our opinions shift and everything. And in particular, Natalie has talked about shifting opinions with Angel, and I felt the same way. And I'm curious, you know, I like Angel. I already know I like Angel, but I'm wondering if I'm going to like it even more now that I'm matured and kind of see him in a different light. It's going to be, I think, an experience for all of us, which is really exciting. Next typeable comment, Caitlin, would you like to read this?
Yes, Melissa says, "I'm so excited we're on to season 4. It's finally here. I'm really curious to see newbies' reactions to the season with the way the show evolves. I personally love the humor in season 4, especially due to an unexpected situation that comes about, and I think I know what she means. This is the point where I really started to get crazy hooked. I have a handful of favorite episodes, including a couple that are deemed by a lot of people as some of the worst, winky face, but also one that I think is Emmy-worthy. I'm a bit bummed that we're only doing one episode a week now, and I have a confession to make. I'm a huge Buffy fan, but I never watched Angel. He always seemed like a big, dull dud to me, and I didn't like the impression I got that it was a darker, colder show. So now I will be a super fan and a newbie at the same time. And I will say, I do think it's a darker show. I don't know that I think it's a colder show. So I guess we'll see."
Well, it's definitely a little bit colder because he's always wearing that jacket.
Oh, Brittany's got jokes. Okay, would you like to take this last comment?
Sure. This one's from Sarah, also on Hypeable. She says, "I am so excited that you all are starting Angel. Buffy will always be my favorite just because of the impact it had on me growing up. But in so many ways, I've always identified with the themes and humor of Angel more. I'm hopeful that the newbies who haven't been enjoying Buffy will like Angel better, as they're very different shows. As much as Buffy is about growing up and fighting the demons in your life, Angel is about struggling as an adult and fighting the demons in yourself. Plus, newbies, I promise you, the Angel you've seen up until this point is just a shadow of the brilliant, hilarious, ridiculous vampire to come. Stay tuned." I hope so. I mean, would also really like Angelus to come back, but we'll see. Maybe.
You got 5 seasons, Brittany.
I know. There has to be, give me one episode. That's all I'm asking.
All right. That wraps up our discussion. But before we go, we are going to do Mitch's musings, a.k.a. Brittany's brainstorms. Kristen, please feel free to join in on this. But we're going to read off the titles for the next 2 episodes and see what the newbies can guess. See if you can get the synopsis correct. So first one is 402 for Buffy. It is titled Living Conditions.
Well, clearly we're going to have some roommate drama because, you know, that's snoring can only go on for so long. And the Celine poster. although that was me in college. I had the Celine poster. But, yeah, I have a feeling it's going to have something to do with that. Although they could pull the rug out from under me and Giles could be moving in with that hottie. So you never know. Or it could be both stories. Could be both. But I really think it's going to have something to do with Buffy's roommate. Maybe she's evil because Buffy can't have anything nice in the world. but maybe she just gets kidnapped by vampires. Who knows? But I think it's definitely going to focus on that.
Or maybe they just realized that Buffy is in the wrong dorm and they put her in like the senior dorms because it was so nice. And so now she's going to have to go to the actual freshman dorm, which is like a shoebox.
Yeah, that would be much more realistic.
All right. And Angel 102 is titled Lonely Hearts.
Oh, boy. Maybe there are a bunch of people who are feeling lonely and they're actually under some sort of spell and demons are making them feel lonely. So they all go to this like singles bar and Angel has to go and save everyone at the singles bar because when he walks in, they all try to molest him because he's so brooding and attractive.
And an actor.
And an actor.
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe Angel and Cordy, like, miss people. Like, maybe they just start missing the crew a little bit, and they talk about it, and then some of that stuff Brittany just said happens, so that there's more to go in the episode. But, like, I could definitely see them talking about, like, you know, Cordy used to be the life of the party, and now she doesn't have any parties to go to, really. So it might have something to do with that.
In other words, this episode's going to be really depressing.
I mean, with a title like Lonely Hearts, yeah, you've kind of...
But yeah. Angel is such an uplifting show. His character's really going to shine music. Through.
Well, they've started setting off fireworks. I don't know if you guys can hear them in the background, oh but I gosh. Feel like that's an inappropriate...
My dog is ready to jump through my computer screen and hide if he could.
Aww.
It's so bad here.
Ooh, that was a big one.
Yeah, they're getting bigger. I don't like it. The sun's down.
I don't.
Like, if I could see them, I'd be more into it. But I can't see them. I just hear them.
All right. Well, I think this is a good outro music for us, is the beautiful fireworks in the background. So until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
Back to the routine. I feel so much better now. I'm not sick. Well, I'm a little sick, but...
Karen's back again. That was for you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.